This podcast is brought to you by The Shift.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you first and foremost by the patrons on the Storytime Superhero tier on Patreon. Please consider becoming a patron of the podcast if you aren't already. This podcast is also sponsored by Amazon Music. So Amazon Music Unlimited is a premium music subscription service that features over 70 million songs and thousands of expert programs, playlists and stations. With Amazon Music Unlimited, you can listen to any song, anytime, anywhere across all your devices. You'll never see or hear an ad. And of course, you can download songs or playlists for offline listening. Amazon Music gets to know you, personalizes your recommendations based on your listening habits from their catalog of 70 million songs. And not only does it have songs, but it also has podcasts. And it is soon to have this very podcast, which is very exciting. So go to getamazonmusic.com/Clizair or click the link in the YouTube description or in the show notes on the audio platforms. That's getamazonmusic.com/Clizair. That's spelled C-L-I-S-A-R-E, getamazonmusic.com/Clizair to get your free 30-day trial. Cancel anytime for Amazon Music Unlimited. Let's get on with the episode.
It's story time!
Hello and welcome back to the Storytime podcast. My name is Claire. I go by Clizair on the internet, and this is the podcast where guests come on to tell me their stories. And today I have with me Fionn Collins. Hello, Fionn.
Hi, how are you doing?
How are you? Would you like to introduce yourself, tell people where to find you on the internet?
Yeah, of course. So my name is Fionn Collins, or some people know me on Twitter, Fionn McKill. My at on every social media is at You're No Fionn, so U-R-N-O Fionn. So it's supposed to sound like You're No Fun, but not a lot of people get the whole idea. It takes a few people a few times to get it, but we're here now to explain it.
I actually might, I'm beginning to think I already follow you because Fionn McKill sounds really familiar.
Yeah, a lot. I've been introduced as Fionn McKill a few times anyway, so, but no, spoiler alert, that's not my actual name. It's my stage name, if you will.
Yeah, so I'll put all your links in the description on YouTube and in the audio platforms, but you have a story for me today.
Of course, of course. So, like I said, hi everybody, my name's Fionn. I am 24. I'm the current Vice President for Welfare at the TWC campus, and I'm also transgender. So I was born female, I identify as male. My pronouns are he, him, so that's how I identify. I'm also bisexual, and I'm here to tell you a little bit about how I'm still alive somehow. With my travels over the past month have been a bit kind of insane. I had to travel abroad for top surgery, or a double mastectomy is more of the scientific term, to Poland during a pandemic. So that's the whole kind of buzz we're going on currently, because unfortunately in Ireland at the moment there is no one who will do top surgery for trans masculine people. So we have to kind of outsource our healthcare kind of outside of Ireland, unfortunately.
So I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt your anthem, but I'm just curious. Do you get any supports for that at all? Because a lot of, you know, the way some stuff is covered in the HSE if you just land into the hospital or whatever. So for a break or something. So comparatively, do you get any kind of support from the state on that?
See, the thing is, in regards, you can get the cross-border directive, whereas you kind of get money back if you fly, but it's kind of strict criteria. So it's like you have to get invoices and stuff, and, you know, it's quite like, you know, you need invoices and you have to have a consultation, you have to get a referral. And it's quite difficult because if you can't get a referral, you can't avail the money back. So, and you have to remember that some people are waiting 4 years just to be seen publicly. Okay. Should we just get hormones? So a lot of people have to wait 4 years publicly. And then if they can't get on that list, a lot of people just do it by themselves, so they can't get the referral, so they can't get the money back. So I mean, it depends. It depends on situations, you know. I was lucky; my GP referred me, you know, just as like kind of a thing where he said like, "Oh, I'm going with my friend Noah Halpin," you know. So I was lucky because you do need a referral to get through the airport as well. We haven't gotten to the airport, but wait till we get there.
Yeah, but, sorry, I totally interrupted the start of the story. Right from the start.
I mean, I could still talk about like healthcare. I mean, there's no one in Ireland that will do, and support wise, I mean, you've got the likes of like Tenney and stuff, but like financially, Not really. You've got the treatment abroad scream as well, but again, like, that's something like a lot of people have to wait years before they're seen. My story, I suppose, before I even get straight into it, I could tell you I came out when I was quite late in life. You know, I was about 18, but I didn't fully come out to everyone until I was 21. So I've been out for about 3.5 years now, you know. So I kind of decided when I came out publicly to everyone that I wanted to kind of transition under the radar for a while. So I got on the list when I was about 20. So I was already on the list for, you know, for a while before. And now I'm publicly seen not by the National Gender Service, who is in Dublin, but I'm seen by a consultant in Drogheda. So I suppose I was lucky in that way that, like, you know, I have my healthcare here. But when it came to top surgery, I didn't. So I had to go privately. I decided to go to Poland. But again, the cost of it was €6,500. Now, that was everything all inclusive. I know, but that's really good. That's probably the cheapest option the transvascular people have. So for myself, I was quite lucky that my friend Noah and a few other of my friends within the union and stuff shared my GoFundMe and ended up raising it. So I was very grateful. But the first time around, this is my second time having to get surgery, because the first time I went to England, I got a double mastectomy, but he left an extreme amount of tissue and breast tissue included in skin and stuff in my chest still. Oh, so God. I had to get like a revision. Yeah. So I had to get two surgeries, whereas normally people would just get like the one, but I had to get a full kind of chest reconstruction again just last month.
And is that so, like, not a bit negligent of the first guy?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm not going to name names of surgeons. I'll name my surgeon in Poland, but I won't name the surgeon in England, but definitely negligent. And it cost me about, just for the surgery alone, it cost me €8,500 for that surgery in England. So, and then obviously time off work and everything, it cost me about nearly €11,000.
Oh, God.
Because I had to pay for, you know, food, flights over, etc. And then I paid. That's why, I mean, I'm so grateful that people kind of gave me a dig out for the six and a half grand for everything included. And that was including bringing my friend Noah with me to Poland for about 11, 12 days. So that was a very long time. I was very grateful. But currently in all aspects of healthcare regarding, or not even healthcare, but in regarding, like, you know, name change and everything, me just being trans has cost me about €15,000. So, and I got that loan out when I was 22. So,
wow.
I mean, yeah, tough going. But that's not even into the main story yet. Like, when we get into the whole kind of COVID related one, I mean, it gets worse. I mean, you know, I was grateful that, like I said, and I'm still grateful to this day, because I know a lot of people, especially students who are trans, can't access healthcare at all because, you know, maybe they're not out or they don't have funds or whatever. But when it came to me, again, I was lucky that I'm out, and I'm lucky I've got support of friends, and I booked my flights, and I've been on the waiting list for this surgeon in particular in Poland, Dr. Lembas, for about 1.5 years now. So before, like, even before COVID hit, I was on that waiting list because I just knew I wasn't comfortable with the way my chest looked after the first guy really botched it. I'm going to be honest, really botched it. But I was grateful. I do not regret, one thing people ask me is I do not regret the first surgery, because my chest was a 38 double F, I believe. Well, I hadn't measured it in a while, but it was quite big. Yeah, it was quite big. F, I think. Sorry, I don't really remember, but it was definitely the last time I checked, that's what it was, and it had gotten bigger since then. But he took off about 2.5 kg in the first time, the first surgery in England, and the second time when I got it done last month, he took an extra kg off.
Wow.
So yeah, so that's a lot.
Yeah, so even though the first one didn't go quite right, it was still a big, like, weight that got physically taken off. And I mean that physically, not metaphorically. Yeah.
Yeah, a bit both. I mean, metaphorically it was good because I didn't have to bind, and binding is like, you know, chest binding. It's like,
yeah, that must have been hard with big boobs.
Yeah, extremely. Yeah, they were quite sore. Quite. And I have a lot of damage to my, like, posture and ribs and stuff. And I know people who double bind, so they wear two kind of like compression vests, I suppose, that people don't really understand. But yeah, it wasn't the best. So I knew the first surgery, even though it didn't go to plan, it helped me because I didn't have to do that, you know. But I'm grateful now that I have had the surgery. But I suppose, like, when I booked everything pre-COVID, I didn't expect it, you know, to be a thing, because my mental health after the first one, you know, you expect the whole hype. I've spent my whole life wondering, you know, what my chest would look like. And then all of a sudden, it's not what I expected. And I hyped it up because I was grateful that my friend Roisin O'Donovan, who was the vice president for welfare at the time, who I was there, and Rebecca Gorman and Jess Morris, they all had a fundraiser for me. And we raised money for me to get the first surgery. And we made this big hype about it. And then all of a sudden I wasn't happy and I had to be all, oh, I'm grateful, you know. And my mental health just got really shit, to be honest with you, because I was meant to be this big, you know, oh, look, Fiona got a surgery, and it just, I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
So I booked this, I booked this reconstruction surgery. COVID hit and I was really depressed. I was like, oh, I don't know if I can go for this. And then country started opening up. And, you know, like I was like, right, okay, this is good. You have to get a COVID test before you fly. And when you're over there, new regulations came in before you come home to Ireland, you just get another COVID test. And I was like, right, that's not too bad, right? Surely it's not going to be that bad, right? No, because it's me. Life has to throw a few sticks in my way. And unfortunately, my uncle, the end of January, got COVID and went missing for a few days. He ended up being in hospital really sick. And I live with my aunt and my uncle. And
with the uncle that got COVID?
Yes. And I was not about to have this 2 weeks before surgery as well. So I knew if I got COVID, I couldn't have surgery. So I decided, right, let's isolate in my room. So that meant, you know, very restrictive movements, like the kitchen's downstairs. He ended up coming home, and out of the hospital, they let him home early, and he would have been in the kitchen. He would have been in the bathroom. I was like, what am I going to do? And then my aunt ended up getting COVID as well, who I live with. So I was like, right, nah, hope. What are we going to do? So I was like, grant. So I booked an Airbnb for about a week and a half before flying, and it cost me €550. So I isolated by myself. And then I decided, right, we're going to get COVID tests.
That was really clever. Sorry, I just want to say that. I would have been like, oh, yeah, my God, what to do? That was really clever. I didn't think of that.
Oh, yeah. I think it was such a thing because I knew I was going to an Airbnb in Poland. And I was like, Airbnb in Dublin, of course. But that's a whole nother story. You can get someone else's story about Airbnbs in Dublin because the price for a week and a half,
it was ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, it was another hole in my pocket. But I got a COVID test privately then. I actually got two privately, and then I got the close contact one as well. So I got three COVID tests within 1 week, all negative, thank God. And then I had to get another COVID test just before I flew as well. So my poor nose, Jesus Christ. So I got all negative, thank God. And then I was grateful that I could fly with all my documents. You know, I had like my surgeon, I had like my GP, I had my other GP, I had all the documents say it was essential travel because, you know, like I said, you can't get this healthcare in Ireland. And we flew, I got another COVID test again before surgery, and again negative, and then I got the surgery. So all was going pretty well, you know, coming up to surgery. And the healthcare in Poland, I have to say, is brilliant, quite efficient, quite fast. And, you know, blood samples, 30 seconds, you know, everything was great. And I have a fear of blood, so I was very, very happy that it was in and out.
And just out of curiosity, did they speak English?
Some did. Well, I mean, the nurses in the hospital broke in English. And then my surgeon was fluent in English. He's very good English. Oh, and his nurses have very good English. Yeah. Now, again, some nurses, like, I mean, the nurse who checked me in didn't have good English, but she had the app, you know, where you speak in Google Translate and then it relays it out and then you speak.
No way. Oh, my God. That's so handy.
And because, you know, the thing is, he actually said to me, the surgeon was like, that specific surgeon, Dr. Lemba, said, we are the highest number of surgeries he does is from trans masculine people in Ireland. And that's a couple of hundred to a couple of thousand he's done. And I was like, that's insane. And he was like, yeah, and I'm a cosmetic surgeon. He does everything you name it. He does, you know, if you want, you know, liposuction, if you want a nose job, rhinoplasty, whatever, ears tucked, he does it all. But his most busiest is trans people. And I was like, I can't believe that, because, you know, if you can do anything, you know. But it was just because he's the most popular kind of choice for trans people in Ireland at the moment. But like I said, like I was lucky that he's great English. You know, healthcare there is really good. Very quick, very, you know, this is, no judgment, which is what you need, you know.
Yeah.
Like if you're going in, even for yourself, like if you're going to talk about certain things, you don't want your GP being like, you know. I sent no question, you know, like he was pretty cool, especially as well, like I'll touch on quickly enough, like, you know, being in Poland, I was a bit nervous because of all the hate crime, the LGBT hate crime coming out as well.
Yeah.
But no, it was pretty good. He's a really good guy. I mean, I got a few looks, but I'm pretty sure that's the blonde tips I've got in my hair. I don't blame everyone gives me looks because of my blonde tips. They think I'm from NSYNC or something, but I don't blame I don't blame them. Yeah, I mean, well, I don't blame them. It wasn't because I was trans, because it was, we're like, you know, part of the LGBT community, it was definitely the blonde tips. But you know, but when I got the surgery anyway, I was grateful. You know, I mean, it was cheap enough, you know, because, you know, the last surgery
in comparison,
it was 8.5, you know, just for surgery. So this surgery cost me about 3.5, nearly 4, and then everything else, like six and a half altogether. But everything went fine until I had my reveal anyway. So my reveal was about a week later, and he realized, you know, look, it's a little bit of buildup of fluid. It's not quite yet a seroma, but which is like a buildup of fluid, but there's fluid, and we'll just drain it for you. And I was like, okay, that's cool. And again, I got COVID tests with my friend Noah. We were very grateful again to be negative, so we flew home. Now, unfortunately, the day I got the mini fluid seroma thing drained, we had to fly home. Because again, I didn't have enough money to stay longer. I wish I could have, obviously, but like that, I mean, I've got work to do. I've got a life going on. I mean, I can't afford it, you know. So I went. We flew home on the plane. Now I have to say, on the plane there and on the plane back, I have to say was terrible. There was no social distancing. There was no cut off seats like on the bus here. If anyone's at the bus or the Dart in Dublin or in Ireland, like the bus there, and I know seats are cut off, not on planes. No, that wasn't a thing. People were told if you want to eat, you could take your mask down, not wear your mask, you know, like stuff like this. I was like, that's disgraceful. No washing of the hands, you know. So I was like, this isn't, you know, I'm a type 1 diabetic. This isn't okay. And my friend Noah, he's asthma. So he asked the guy beside him who wasn't wearing a mask to put it on. And we called the lady like 3 or 4 times, you know. And then eventually Noah got up and said, look, listen, if this person doesn't put a mask on, he's putting us at risk. And unfortunately, that was about 45 minutes of, you know, arguing with them to get him moved or call airport police. And this is an ongoing thing. And it was just, that was on the way home. And unfortunately, we, like I said, we tested negative. But like, I'm pretty sure I was isolating, like, because we were so nervous again getting it. And we isolated when we came home straight. Like, we came straight home. I isolated Noah's house. But fortunately, we ended up testing positive for coronavirus. And I'm 100% it was on the plane. Because unfortunately, when I, like I said, before I left Poland, I had a seroma, it was a buildup, and ended up getting extremely worse. Now, for people who don't know what a seroma is, it's like I said, it's a buildup of fluid, like it can get infected quite easily. It can turn to sepsis if it's not treated or drained. And it was quite large. So I went to A&E on the Monday, and I did a routine swab of coronavirus, you know, like COVID tests, and I unfortunately tested positive. I was extremely ill, you know, but I wasn't sure if that was the COVID or if that was the, you know, seroma, you know, so
yeah.
They're quite similar in their symptoms, but
really?
It was more, yeah. So, I mean, like the exhaustion, you know, because I thought I was infected. So, you know, exhaustion, you know, similar kind of infection kind of stuff, you know, like I didn't have a temperature, but my blood levels being a diabetic were really
God,
high.
Yeah, how did that play into it?
Not the best, to be honest. My blood levels, I actually became for 2 weeks nearly immune to insulin.
Oh my God. That's not good.
No. I was extremely ill because of it. So I had to like double up on insulin, like 3 times the amount I've ever had to take, you know.
Oh my God.
But and you know, I was grateful that like my team, my diabetic team were there to help me. But on the first day when I went to A&E, you know, they said to me, look, you've got COVID, you know, whatever, you'll have to, you know, isolate at home, whatever. And I said, look, I've got this seroma and that's causing me the most pain at the moment. Like when I mean pain, it's like someone had a knife in my chest. Like it's sharp, achy, painful, you know, I mean, plus I've just come out of surgery, right? You know, I mean, a week later, it's not ideal. And they told me, no, you can't. There's nobody here to do this. We're not going to do it. And they said also because you've flown abroad. And I said, okay, I understand the flying abroad, but I actually don't have healthcare in Ireland. I'm trans. And they were like, well, since you've accessed healthcare abroad, we don't have any aftercare here for you. And I said, not fair. I'm an Irish citizen. Like, what can I do? Like, if I've got a seroma here, if this was anywhere else. And they were like, no, they refused, actually, first of all.
That's crazy. What if you died? I'm not saying know whether that kind of thing. I don't know how serious they can get. But like, hypothetically, like, would they just be like, oh, sorry.
You should remember,
well,
I'm also crazy. Yeah, but I mean, trans people aren't the only people. I'm more concerned as well. Like, yes, trans people access healthcare abroad, but there's other people who access healthcare abroad for other reasons, as well.
Yeah.
There's sick people like all the time, you know. So, like, if they came abroad, were you going to say the same thing, you know? And they were like, being a bit weird then, and I explained, like, listen, the HSC cross-border scheme is what I'm trying to avail of here. I was sent, you know, abroad by the HSC, and I've been, you know, got the okay, and then they eventually were like, okay, and then I mentioned, look, I'm a diabetic as well, and then it was only when they were like, you know, it took a bit of bargaining, to be honest.
Yeah, you're very lucky that you knew your stuff about, like, those schemes and things.
And exactly, but I mean, you shouldn't have to argue in regards to...
No, I agree, right? Totally, yeah.
So eventually they let me in and then refused me and told me to come back the next day when they could, you know, refer me on to the breast clinic because they didn't know what to do, you know. And I said, okay. And then I came in the next day and I was grateful that they actually did drain the seroma. But again, I was waiting in. They put you in this big isolation room with, like, the lock seals. Everyone comes in and wears, you know, which is completely.
Are they wearing a full thing or just, like, masks?
Oh, no, the full get up, you know, because again, you have to remember I tested positive.
Full get up, are they?
Yeah, they have the mask, they've the what visor and the overbody thing. I mean, of course, I mean, it's coronavirus. Like, you have to wear your mask and everything, and gloves and hand sanitize, and you wear your mask. Of course, like, I don't want anyone else to be sick. I just wish your man on the plane just wore his mask, and I presume this wouldn't be happening. Like,
that's terribly traumatic as well, though, because you know, you're in pain, and then they're full. Rig out.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I didn't mind them doing that. I mean, they had to do it to keep themselves safe. Yeah. And, you know, I just wanted the seroma. I just didn't want to be there for long because I wanted, you know, the drain of the fluid and stuff. And the breast team came down and they drained it. You know, that was fine. But within the 24 hours that they actually made me wait from the Monday to the Tuesday, the seroma had actually, like, halved, you know, and it ended up getting extremely, it's like rock on my side. Like, it went from fluid to, like, rock. It was really weird. And they were like, oh, you know, when they were drained, they were like, oh, I've seen bigger. Oh, I don't know, you know, making some comments like this. And I was kind of getting annoyed. And I was like, just drain the thing.
Yeah.
And eventually after, you know, they were like, we're not going to do it. And I went crazy. I was in so much pain. I was like, you are going to do this right now. Where I was like, I will see you. I went full Karen. I was like, I am fucking sue. Like, I was like, I'm in pain. Oh, I went crazy. And they eventually did, but they only drained my one, the left side. I was like, I'm getting annoyed now because.
Was it on both sides?
It was both sides. And it was the side and in the middle. So you touch one side and the whole fluid would move around. And it was like a whole swimming pool in there at one point, you know. And I was getting real annoyed. And, eventually the drain's just the one side and it feels a lot better. It's like a blister, you know, a big blister. So yeah. You can only imagine, you know, when a blister really hurts and it's sharp, and it's just imagine that, but on your chest, and it's like huge. Like, it's literally, they drained 300 mls, I think it was, out of my chest.
Wow.
And the first, yeah, that, but they said that was small. And I was like, are you kidding me? That was 300 mls I didn't need in the one side of my chest, you know? But then eventually they told me, look, you're being sent to plastics. So I said, okay. And then the breast clinic were like, listen, we'll also look after you in a bit. And I was like, right. But again, they were being a bit iffy and a bit weird. And I went home and I was trying to deal with the whole COVID thing. And I was ringing up every day being like, where's my appointment? Because it's getting bigger again. Because the minute if you drain it, you constantly have to drain it for like a week. My surgeon actually recommended once a week in Poland. They would have, if I stayed for like another 2 weeks, they would have done it once a week or as many times as needed just to like get it out. But they said to me, look, when I rang up the hospital again, I said, look, listen, I'm getting quite annoyed if I'm ringing. I think it was 5 days at this point, and I was ringing and saying, look, where's this appointment? Because, you know, A&E, if you leave A&E, if you're discharged, you usually get an appointment there and then, but I didn't. Turns out that they discharged me from both clinics without me knowing. And I had been ringing to look for an appointment that was never made for me because they felt that, no, he doesn't need another fluid draining, even though I had requested, because again, I was in pain and the recommendations of my surgeon. And he just said, no, we're not doing it. So I was like, look, I'm getting in a lot more pain. And eventually during this whole time, I was grateful that COVID had passed. So we're looking at about 2 weeks now, you know. You know, I was like, right, okay. And eventually I went home because I was staying in Noah's. And again, the fluid's building up and I'm in a lot of pain again. So I decided, right, I'm going to have to go to A&E. And I went to my local hospital, A&E there. And I explained the situation, everything to them. And they brought me in. And again, like I said, the seroma kind of hardened. And I went in and they said to me, look, we rang the hospital you were previously at and they told us not to do anything. So we can't do anything for you here. Ugh. And I said, I'm in a lot of pain here and it's really sore. And we ended up finding out that what happens with seroma is they harden, they like solidify kind of, and you can form abscesses, and I now currently have like two large abscesses on either side under my arms and both sides of my chest because the fluid wasn't drained. So she tried to have a look and tried draining them as well. But again, it's too thick at the moment. So I was grateful. Shout out to the nurse or doctor in Tala Hospital. They were grateful. They really tried to help me, but they couldn't because I'd been left so long without treatment. And this treatment that I was supposed to get, this drained, it would have stopped all these problems. So now my issue is I'm kind of stuck in a weird limbo of like, I've got two abscesses on my side now. They're quite painful. You can't really do anything with. You can't. They're like, I've got a stitch abscess, there's one of them, and the other is just an abscess. And you kind of just have to let it dissolve into your body. And again, I was waiting in A&E, I think in Tala, for 12 hours or something nearly. And they said to me, look, listen, I said, if you don't do anything, I emailed my surgeon while I was in the waiting room. I should probably add to the story. And I said, what will I do? And I was explaining to him, like, they won't do it. I've been refused before and they won't do it. And he said, look, listen, if this gets so bad, you're going to have to drain it. And he actually sent me a letter, he sent me an email, and we don't do letters anymore, right? he sent me an email and it was like, look, here's the gauge of the needle you get. If you can get your hands on a needle, I would suggest you do it yourself. And I said,
oh my God.
I said, I can't do it. I cannot do that. I could hit something, you know, whatever. And now again, it's no fault of the surgeon. It's so common.
Yeah.
In Poland, you can walk into any GP and they can drain it for you. And my GP said, no, you have to go to A&E. And A&E said, no, you have to go here. Like, there's a lot of tossing around in Ireland, whereas in Poland and other EU countries, they just go up to a GP and they do it, you know? So I told the doctor in the hospital that I was in Tala, I said, look, listen, if I'm going to do this myself if you don't do it. And I'm pretty sure that's the only reason that somebody tried to, I got called within the next 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not, like, it's
that's
not okay.
A bad idea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's not fair. I mean, if
no, it's definitely not fair.
Clearly threatened. People to threaten themselves, you know, to be like, look, listen, I'll do it myself. So unfortunately at the moment, I'm stuck in this weird limbo of like, I still don't have aftercare in Ireland and I've got two abscesses that are quite sore. When you move, I can't move properly. I can't reach a certain height. But again, I just had surgery. But again, I should have been healed by now, but I can't because I've got these abscesses. And I don't know if anyone's ever had an abscess, but that's extremely sore. Never mind getting two of them, you know. So, the lack of healthcare in Ireland for trans people is actually, you know, diabolical at this point, because now if you go abroad to get the healthcare that we, you know, need and we come home, no one's going to treat us because they see us as like an other, you know. And I was told by the doctor here, you know, why did you go abroad? Don't you have this here? And I said, we actually don't. You know, there was a public surgeon in Ireland is actually retired and people are being referred to a public surgeon that doesn't exist. You know, they're being referred, you know, to this like person that's no longer here. There's a private surgeon in Ireland, but her cost is from 9 to 12 grand, you know, anyway in between there. But again, her criteria is quite strict as well, and her waiting list is quite long. Whereas, you know, in Poland, and a lot of people are going to like Spain, Greece, you know, across Europe and stuff. Even some people are going as far as, you know, America. But again, when you come home, if you have any complications, you know, you're fucked. If I'm going to be honest, yeah. You're really fucked because they don't see you. And you always get weird questions like, oh, why did you have a double mastectomy? You don't need one. Because, you know, I pass quite well. You know, I don't tell everybody I'm trans. It's not nobody's business. They're like, oh, you pass really well. You know, like, why would you, a man, need one? I'm like, and this awkward, embarrassing conversation of like me trying to whisper through the glass and being like, trans, because it's, you don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be discriminated against, I don't want to be attacked, you know, it's happened before, so I don't want anything like that to happen again. When I'm just trying to get healthcare, that in Poland you can literally walk into your GP and they do it for you for
yeah,
anything, nothing. So
god, yeah, so that was some experience.
Definitely not my best one, to be honest. I've had better experiences, but not my favorite experience. And yeah, unfortunately, I think at the moment, in regards to trans healthcare in Ireland, you know, I think we need to pick up the pace. I think, you know, if you do send people abroad, you know, which we shouldn't be, I mean, bodily autonomy and stuff, we said that we wouldn't be sending anyone else abroad for any sort of healthcare. But yet here we are, you know, a few years later, we're still sending people abroad for healthcare, which I think is absolutely disgraceful. But if you're going to send people abroad, can you at least give them the healthcare as an Irish citizen or as an Irish person, or, you know, anyone deserves healthcare when they come home, you know?
Yeah, and that was my big thing. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, I was already upset having to go abroad and I was already stressed, you know, having to fly for surgery in the first place, which is extremely nerve-wracking as well. Yeah. And especially by yourself, you know, I was grateful.
Especially during COVID, even worse.
Even worse, you know, and the finances weren't great either. And, you know, like 700 quid I spent on COVID tests. Like, Jesus Christ, 700 quid. You know, and then like having to go in, like, I mean, I remember like with my friend Noah, he was saying to me, look, I wish I could be in the room with you when you woke up. And, you know, I wish I was there. Like, there was none of that. I was alone for the whole, like, for a good, like, nearly 48 hours, you know.
Yeah, because he wasn't allowed in to see you, was he not?
He wasn't, you know, until like I was fully ready and stuff. Like, and I'm aware there's a lot of people who are in the same boat as me, like, they like going into surgery. It's scary, you know. You want to be able to wake up to your loved ones or wake up to somebody, and it's scary enough as it is, you know, just going for surgery. But then I had, you know, COVID on top of it, and I was in another country, and then there was a little bit of a language barrier, and it was just shite, to be honest with you. You know,
a lot to have to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. And I wish, I wish it was at home. I wish I was able to go home after, into my own bed, have my mom or have my family members around me, and to be like, are you doing okay? You know, because I have a bit of a moan myself. I wish, mom, make me a cup of coffee, you know. There was none of that, you know. I mean, it was tough. It was a tough going kind of experience. And the fact that I had to do it twice wasn't my favorite thing, because, you know, I fully believe that anyone has the right to, they should have the right to healthcare in Ireland, regardless of if they're trans or not, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's just something that the community were used to, unfortunately. And I hate using that word, like, you know, or I hate using the word, like, I had to get the Irish people here to believe me. You know, yeah. I hate that word, because I had to nearly convince them that I had the right to healthcare here.
Yeah.
And that really, really pissed me off, because, you know, I'm going to A&E for a seroma. Why did you make it such a big deal whether I'm trans or not, you know?
Yeah, I also don't really understand why, in particular, you said that, like, the hospital were like, we've talked to the previous hospital. So you've just explained to a hospital that the previous hospital failed you. And then the new hospital is like, well, we actually just asked them there, you know, what they thought. And they said, we should fail you too. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense to me.
I know, but I was very grateful. That really annoyed me, actually. But I was very grateful that the girl who was there did her best. You know, she could do what she said. She actually said to me, that's not right. She was like, and she knew there was definitely a little bit of transphobia in there from the previous hospital, because she was very much like, she said, I've seen a lot of women, you know, who've had breast cancer come into me with seromas. So she was fully aware of what it was.
Yeah.
And she was like, so I'm going to do my best and treat it as if it's a seroma, you know. It's the same thing. She said, you know, like, to drain them or to do this. She was like, I can do my best, you know. And she was, I'm very grateful that she did try and help me, but she definitely got some kind of feedback from the previous hospital who were like, no, don't treat him. It was definitely like transphobia, because I mean they definitely made like it out to be like, oh, he's a man, so da da da, you know what I mean? Oh, da, da, da. Where she turned to me and was like, you know, it's as if any patient has come in here with double mastectomy, I can do exactly what I know to do. They just made a big deal out of it because they were like, oh, he's a dude, you know. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, no, just strain it, just do it, you know. It's painful, you know. I want some help here. But yeah, no, in Tala, they were pretty good. Yeah, she really did help me, in all fairness to her.
And, well, do you know what you're going to do next, like, with the abscesses, or what's your next move?
Yeah, so she told me that, like I said, the doctor told me that with the abscesses, they kind of have to stitch abscesses, so they just have to be left alone. So it's just painkillers. You just have to kind of leave it be, you know.
And have you any idea how long that's going to go on for?
No, not really. Like, it could take a couple of weeks. But the thing is, with the fluid that's still left in my chest, my surgeon in Poland and the doctor who was quite helpful there, like I said, Patala said to me, look, listen, it's going to be a few months before that fully, your body has to absorb it. So unfortunately, if I just got it drained, I wouldn't have this issue of having to wait a few months before, you know, it absorbs into your body, you know. But in regards to what I'm doing now is I'm kind of, you know, physically with my body, I can't really do anything else. I just have to rest up. I've got to, you know, let everything absorb, you know. But in regards to like maybe some politics, I've really tried to push my story, and I've written some articles, I've done this great podcast, and I've done some other podcasts as well, just to get the story out. And I know my friend Noah Halpin is doing the same thing, you know. We're pushing for like pushing the HSC to, you know, kind of to get some trans healthcare. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's a diagnostic model as well they're kind of going through at the moment, and you know, it's not fair, you know, it's not best practice, it's not best standards from WPATH. So like, we're doing stuff like that as well. And even to get the aftercare at home, I mean, we sent a little, we did our union, like I said, I worked for T Dublin Students Union, and I was working closely with USI to like send some emails, you know, to do like stuff like that, you know, just, I mean, there's not much you can do during, like during COVID, you know, just send a few emails to a few DEDs, hoping for gender recognition, and then also send them to the leadership team and the HSC, you know, hoping, you know, for somebody to kind of start this conversation, because it's something that's kind of, I don't want to say it's an uprise, but it's nice to kind of see at the moment people start to give a fuck about you. And I know that sounds, you know, brutal, but
yeah,
like,
but a bit of support and a bit of grassroots sort of groundswell towards change.
Exactly. Like, definitely there has to be change, you know. I mean, I think people are compassionate, you know, and they're understanding, because, you know, they understand, you know, everyone, you know, if you want to get healthcare, imagine being refused in your local A&E, like, or any, whatever, it's not great. No. So, I mean, I am grateful that people are really trying to help, but again, it's they're not going to listen to, you know, one or two people. We need a lot of people on board, you know, but there's not much we can do but keep fighting, spread messages, you know, in regards to maybe some transphobia, if anybody says, or even like homophobia or anything, you know, any discrimination at all, you know, just getting people to stand up against it. I think that's something that we all need to do. You know, if you see any, you know, racism, if you see any, like, anything like that, just stand up and kind of start a conversation, be like, no, that's not right. And when you kind of start doing it, you're kind of being an active ally. And that's something I spoke at recently. I did a kind of like a conference, and I spoke about active allyship versus just being an ally. Like, you could say you're an ally all you want, but are you going to be active about it? You know, are you going to stand up for people? Because, you know, a lot of people hate me and they don't even know me as well, which really, really upsets me, because you don't know my story, my life. I've been through a lot, but you think, you know, online especially, people just hate me because they think they know everything from like the article I wrote once or twice.
Yeah. So thank you so much for sharing that. And I'll put all the links that you mentioned just there down in the description.
Perfect.
And just remind everyone where to find you online before we finish up.
Of course. So on all social medias, it's UrNoFionn. So UrNoFionn.
FionN, just for the Americans who don't know how to spell Fionn.
It's not Finn, FionN.
But all the links will be down in the description on YouTube and in the show notes on the audio platform. So you should just be able to scroll down and click and find and follow. Thank you so much, Fionn, for coming on the podcast.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you so much for listening. The Storytime podcast is available as a video podcast on YouTube. It's also on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify as an audio podcast. And if you could give us a review on one of those platforms as well, that'd be great. So thank you so much, Fionn, and thank you. And I'll see you in the next one. Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by The Shift. For more like this, check out theshift.ie.